You're listening to Thursday Night Tailgate with Chris Mascaro and Bob Lazzari, where NFL legends live on. Back to you, boys.
Hand me the lock.
And now joining us here on Thursday Night Tailgate is Chris Mitchell. Chris has been a friend for a long time. He's one of the most knowledgeable people on the planet when it comes to fantasy sports, and just take the fantasy out of it. Baseball, football, golf, and all the great things that Chris does on his shows and the articles that he's written. You can find him on rotoexperts.com as well as SBNationsMinorLeagueBaseball.com. He hosts a couple of wonderful podcasts called A Podcast to Be Named Later and the Roto Experts Fantasy Sports Show. You can follow him on Twitter at CJMitch73, and we are glad he is back with us tonight here on Thursday Night Tailgate. Hey, Chris and Bob, thanks for joining
What's up,
us
Chris?
Tonight, my friend.
Hey, how's everything going, you guys? Thanks for that very nice introduction, and I was glad that I called in a little early. You know, Denny McClain, I love all sports, and I love talking sports, and I love talking with Chris. As he knows, I like to give him a hard time, but we have a lot of fun. But Denny McClain is a perfect example of what makes baseball so great. The history of the game and the color of it and the fabric of the game that matters so much, more in baseball than any other sport. And you just have fascinating people like Denny McClain that just can come on and talk forever about so many amazing things. I only listened for like 5 or 10 minutes there, but very interesting few minutes there and a fantastic guest. I love baseball and the history of it, and Denny is a great example of a guy that kind of shows what that's like.
Yeah, it really is, and it's always a good time for Bob and I to spend some time with him. And to your point, Chris, when you start going back, and then to Bob's credit, you know, 50 years since the 1968 season and his 31 wins and all of those sorts of things, but all the guys that he had the opportunity to play with and play against and pitch against, yeah, it's so many great stories. And like we say, we look forward to getting him back on the show. But Chris, want to start our time with you talking about some fantasy football, right? We're about a week away from our Thursday Night Tailgate Fantasy Football Draft. And before we talk about who I should take, you wrote an article that was picked up by the Associated Press about who you think, you know, the fantasy busts are going to be. So tell me, who are the guys I should not take?
Yeah, I as you know, I love to be negative. I have no problem being as critical as I can. I mean, I talk down Jordan Spieth when we talk golf. I mean, that's how easy I am at being negative about things. But when it comes to talking about busts, I actually like to talk about guys I like better. But what they asked me to do was write an article about the busts. And going through it, really what it amounts to is when you're trying to put together a bust list, at least when it comes to fantasy football, because in fantasy baseball or some of the other sports, guys can literally be awful. You look at a guy like Cody Bellinger in Los Angeles. He's really kind of been awful this year. He's just been outright bad no matter what. In football, even when guys are bad, they're usually at least acceptable. So as I was putting together this article, I really had to come up with guys who I knew would at least have some value. They'd be productive, but they just wouldn't be quite as good as what you had to pay for them in the draft. And so I looked through the list of some of the guys and where they were being drafted according to fantasypros.com, and then said, all right, this guy's being drafted too high, this guy's going to have a down season, things like that. And one of the guys that came to my mind first was Devontae Freeman of the Atlanta Falcons. He's a very talented guy, took a while to kind of become a star player, but he all of a sudden did become that player. But he's been regressing in the last three seasons with Atlanta. Tevin Coleman isn't the all-around player that Freeman is, but he's good enough where he's kind of eating into his production. He's eating into his opportunities. And when you're looking at a player and when you're looking at fantasy, sometimes the skill set isn't even as important as what kind of opportunity is he going to receive? How many catches is he going to have in the passing game? How much rushing attempts, things like that. And Devontae Freeman is a guy that, because the running back position is so thin in fantasy sports, you really get desperate, and a lot of people have to take guys early than you want to. So Devontae Freeman is going in as a top 20 player, and he's a guy that if I'm you, I want to avoid him at all costs because that's just an expensive price right there. Another guy is Tyreek Hill. Very explosive player, can do a lot of really good things. I was stunned when I was putting together this article. Almost all of his plays last year were made on the Kansas City Chiefs side of the 50. So for a fantasy player to only have – he only had one red zone attempt in the entire season in 2017. So that means he only touched the ball one time inside the opponent's 20-yard line. When you're playing fantasy sports, touchdowns are kind of important. He only had one opportunity to score a touchdown inside the 20. That, to me, is about as scary as you get. Now, he's extremely explosive. For him to be as productive as he was last year, without getting the ball essentially on the opposing side of the 50. That's amazing, but I just don't think that's a situation or a guy that can kind of keep that up. That's remarkable. I couldn't believe that I was able to find that stat and that actually happened. That is pretty remarkable.
So there are a couple of guys that we shouldn't take. So who are give us the opposite side of the coin. Who should I be looking for in the first round?
When you look at it, as I said, the running back position is extremely thin, and you, most leagues you need at least two, and you like to have three because you have a bye week, and a lot of leagues use a utility position or a utility spot and so a lot of times if you can do it, you'd like to have at least three running backs, if not four. And in this day and age where everybody is sharing, where essentially it seems like almost every team is a committee, it's just extremely difficult to find two, never mind three or four running backs. So I think you have to go for one of those elite running backs in the first round, even if you have to reach a little bit. I talked about Devontae Freeman being a reach. I really do think his opportunity is going to downgrade significantly. So that's why I don't like him. But if you have to reach for a guy like a Leonard Fournette or something like that, those are top 10 guys because they are going to get the opportunities, no matter how good or mediocre you think one of them might be. For example, like a Christian McCaffrey. He's an extremely talented player, but he's not a true running back. He's not going to rush the ball 300 times in a season like a Leonard Fournette will be. But he's going in the top 15 because, A, he catches the ball, and, B, he puts up a lot of yards from scrimmage, both in combination rushing the ball as well as catching. But the running back position is just so thin that you know that production is going to be that you have to go for him. So with your first pick, and again, if you're picking at the back of the first round, I don't know how many teams you have in your league, but if you have a 10-team league, if you're picking around 9 or 10, and then you're picking again at like 11 or 12 or 13, I think you have to go running back probably with both of those picks, even though if that means you have to reach for a running back a little bit, maybe take a guy 5 or 6 or 7 picks higher than you want to. As long as you feel comfortable that the guy's going to at least be productive, I think that's where you need to focus. So as a strategy, that's what you need to do. The players themselves, you know, you can pick and choose which ones you like and which ones you don't, but at least, at the very least, you need to focus on the running back position early. Because it's once you get into the third and fourth and fifth round, you're going to find guys that may not really play at all. So they aren't going to be productive guys. Now, you'll hit some. Every league is going to have players that we were surprised by. There's some rookies that I was researching as for this week's article that are intriguing. They're going in the fourth or fifth round. So some of those guys will hit and they'll become viable. But early in the draft, you have to get a running back. So you got to focus there. And if you can, try to get two.
Bob, questions for Chris?
Yeah, Chris, it's great to speak with you again. I wanted to ask you about what we started the show off with, about the Cleveland Browns and how people in Vegas are actually putting money on them for to see that actually how good they're going to do. And, you know, I mean, there was only one way to go and up. We know that they were going to be better. But is this a team that can approach 500, Chris?
500 is asking a lot. The NFL is such a balanced league. It's the whole point of the league is designed for parity. So even good teams that you expect to be dominant may not have a 500 season. And then bad teams, because of just the parity of the league, can play over 500 when you didn't expect it. So to expect 500 for them is difficult, but they have a lot of talent on that team. A lot more than you would think from a team that's won, one game in 2 years. Mm-hmm. That's pretty disturbing. From a fantasy perspective, it's kind of bad because a lot of their players are actually hurting all the other players, because there are actually a lot of talented players on this team. 8-8, I mean, that's going to be tough because it's hard to know what the Bengals are going to be, and I'm not all that impressed with the Ravens. Joe Flacco was just downright terrible last season. So I don't think they're going to give the ball to Lamar Jackson quite yet, so it looks like it's still Flacco's team. But I don't see where this team gets from the Ravens where they get all that much better. So that is a matchup that the Browns maybe can take advantage of. But Tyrod Taylor is still their guy, probably, at least for the first 5 or 6 weeks of the season. Maybe Baker Mayfield gets things together and is ready to take some snaps as a full-time guy, maybe week 8, 9, or 10 or something like that. But it looks like Tyrod Taylor is probably going to be the guy for the first 5 or 6. And if they're winning, he's probably the guy for the season. Now, you don't put in a rookie unless you believe he can actually win games, and most rookies don't do that in their first season. So you're looking at a mediocre quarterback in Tyrod Taylor. He's not awful. He can do a little bit of a lot of things, but he definitely has some limitations. On offense, they have enough of a talent. Their defensive squad wasn't bad last year either. So I don't – I mean, it was bad, and they were winless. But this asking them to go 8-8 stuff. That's really asking a lot. I think if you put the Browns in another city with a better coach and without that history, I think you would definitely think that this is a team that can go over 500. But because it's Cleveland with that organization, with those coaches who are coming back after the winless year, I would take the under, but it wouldn't surprise me if they actually did go over. But if I had to bet my cojones on it, I'm betting the under just slightly. I'd put them at 5 or 6 with a chance at 8 or 9. I mean, because 8 and 8 can win, it can make the playoffs. I wouldn't bet on it, but it's always a possibility.
And the team here in New England, right in our backyard, Chris, the Patriots, here's my take. I mean, Brady will be Brady. Gronkowski won't stay healthy. Edelman comes back, may stay healthy. By the end of the year, they're probably banged up a lot. They'll win a lot. But come postseason, you got to win with defense, and they might fall a little short. What do you think about that team this year?
I agree with you. You look at the Patriots' run of success, and it really is phenomenal. I don't know if there's been many organizations in any sport that have been able to achieve what the Patriots have been able to achieve, considering, like I said, this is a league that is based on parity. If you win one year, it's supposed to be extremely difficult to dominate again, and yet the Patriots win their division year in and year out. Now, granted, the Jets, the Dolphins, and the Bills have done a lot to make that division relatively easy, and that's difficult in and of itself to do. But yes, as long as Tom Brady doesn't fall off a cliff and become a disaster, and sometimes NFL guys can do that. You'll see a guy who goes from being a star to essentially being a bum. I can't imagine that's going to happen. But if that were to happen, then of course the Patriots would be a disaster. The one surprise for me after all these years with how good the Patriots have been is that Bill Belichick was supposed to be a defensive guru. When he was a coach in Cleveland, the only thing they could really do was defend. I mean, their offense was okay. It was very vanilla. They didn't have a big-time playmaker at the quarterback position. They kind of got by. But they really had some really good defenses. And, of course, Belichick's history with the Giants, I mean, I think you got to give him credit, even though when you have Lawrence Taylor, you should be able to do a whole lot of successful things. But nonetheless, defense was their key, too. So Belichick's legacy really was a defensive coach. And then he comes to New England, and all these defenses are kind of bend, don't break, very ugly. Last year was one of the most frustrating seasons I've ever seen. I like to see playmakers. I like to see aggressive defense, and that's just not the way the Patriots do things. And that's what concerns me about the playoffs. Is they're going to win this division. They're going to win at least 11 games. In New England, as you know, you're always looking at it's not whether they're going to win or lose a division. It's whether they're going to have home field throughout the entire playoffs. And if they do, they're probably going to make the Super Bowl. So that's always the kind of the equation you got to factor in. Now, the Patriots are going to win 13 games. I think they probably will. And then in the playoffs, it's all about that defense. Can they do enough? And obviously, as you saw in the Super Bowl, with all the confusion regarding Malcolm Butler aside, it's not all – maybe they did lose because Malcolm Butler didn't get in the game, and we don't know why Bill Belichick did that. But the fact is, you cannot allow that much offense to a relatively good – but the Eagles were not a special offense. And with Nick Foles there as well, to allow that much offense to go against your defense. That is disturbing, and that could happen again because this defense is probably not much better, and it could even be worse than it was last year, which in the first 5 or 6 weeks was abysmal. I mean, the quarterbacks were throwing up 300-plus yards like it was nothing.
Chris, one more before we let you go, and I want to get your thoughts. What impact do you think fantasy football has had on TV ratings and the way that we follow football now versus before fantasy football was a thing?
I think it's interesting because people have thought, well, why was fantasy sports even legal when DraftKings and things like that were created? They're like, that's gambling. Why is gambling allowed? You can't gamble on the NFL. Why can fantasy sports have gambling? And so it got this very popular take to it. And so I think that kind of led a wave of a lot of popularity for fantasy. It kind of exploded. Everyone started playing fantasy sports. It was crazy. So fantasy sports actually became more popular than the NFL. I used to watch the ESPN's game days on Sundays. It was 2 hours. Now it's 3. I used to watch that religiously every single Sunday morning. I would actually get up. I'm a night person. I love sleep until noon on occasion. But every single Sunday morning, I got up in time for that 11 o'clock ESPN show. All of a sudden, about, 5, 6 years ago, they started a fantasy show in competition with their own ESPN show. I haven't watched their ESPN show yet, and I think that's probably pretty common. My guess is that their fantasy show on ESPN2 is more popular and gets better ratings than their NFL pregame show does. So that tells you how popular fantasy sports are. And because of that, I think a lot of people who may not care about football actually have some interest in it because they play fantasy. So they're like, oh, well, who should I draft? And who's going to, you know, who should I start this week? So people who don't necessarily care all that much about football all of a sudden have an interest in it. So I think fantasy sports has contributed significantly to the popularity and just the exposure of the game to a wider swath of people. But when you look at the ratings, I actually think fantasy sports has hurt it. I think when you look at it, for example, I watch the fantasy show on Sundays instead of the normal show. The Red Zone channel, which is up here in Boston, most markets have it. I don't know if everybody does. But the Red Zone channel, all they show is inside the 20. And it doesn't matter how good the game is. It doesn't matter what the matchup is. It doesn't matter if it's a blowout or if it's a close game. All they show is games that are inside the 20, unless there isn't a game inside the 20, and then they just go to whatever the best game is. I watch that more, except when the Patriots are on. I'm a religious Patriots watcher, so if they're on, I'm watching them. But other than that, I am watching that Red Zone channel most of the day on Sunday. And I think that's pretty popular. On top of that, because the I think especially the younger crowd these days, they care about the stats more. If you watch baseball, I think baseball has become a statistical game almost like it did in its beginnings. Back in the olden days when you didn't have TV or everyone didn't have TV, everybody looked at the box scores. That's how fantasy sports actually started in baseball was you got your paper and some guy in your group put together the stats and told you what you got for points that day. There was no internet. There was no email. There was no, you know, spreadsheets. Someone got a piece of paper, got a newspaper, put together a sheet, and they told you how well you did that day. I think that's kind of what we're looking at now these days, only with the technology of it all, is that people don't care that much about the games. They don't care about the standings. They don't care about watching the game on every single Sunday. What they care about is their players and how they're doing. And then when you talk about the real serious people, they care about their money because money is definitely a factor at the bigger levels. So I actually think less people are watching the games because all they care about is the income, is the outcomes, and all they care about is their players. So maybe if you're a passionate Patriot fan like I am, I'm going to watch every single game no matter what. But if you live in like a Cleveland where the team is always bad, are you going to watch the Cleveland Browns lose at 1 o'clock every day? Or are you going to be skimming around all the channels and looking on the internet and using your app to find out how your players, who you've got 15 players on 9 different teams, yeah, I think fantasy sports is actually hurting the viewing public. And I think the young generation just doesn't have the attention span. So they don't want to sit through even an NFL game, which goes fast and is only 3 hours long. I just don't think they want to sit around and do that. They'd rather be running around doing whatever they're doing and then checking their app every 15 minutes on their phones. I mean, it's kind of ridiculous. I saw a comment the other day that it's amazing in this day and age of technology and NASA being able to go to Mars and all these different things, and yet we can't get a cell phone with a good signal. The quality of talking on a cell phone stinks, and yet everybody owns phones so they can go on the internet. It's remarkable. But that, I think, is what's happening with the NFL. The ratings are being damaged because people don't really care about watching the game. What they care about is watching their players, and their players aren't on that one screen. They're on 8 different teams and 7 different games.
Chris, before we let you go, let our listeners know, how can they follow you online and over social media, keep up with all the great things you're doing?
The easiest way to do it is at CJMitch73 on Twitter, at CJMitch73. You guys tweeted it out. I'm on Facebook, just like Denny McClain said he is. I do those podcasts as well as run some Facebook groups. But the easiest way is just find me on Twitter, and I can direct you to whether it's Blog Talk Radio or wherever I may be. But at CJMitch is the best way and the easiest way to find me.
Chris, always a lot of fun getting to spend some time with you. I really enjoy it when we go at it during the majors over on golf and talk about those sorts of things. But thank you for your time. Thanks for being a part of the show. Hope you'll come back and join us throughout the season. Give us your fantasy thoughts and picks, because I know I could certainly use them.
Anytime. Love talking with you guys. Love your show. You do a great job. And, of course, anytime I can bust your hump about the fact that you're going to the Masters and I'm not, then I guess I'm pretty happy.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thanks, Chris. Chris, take care.
All right, take care, guys. Thanks for having
me. We'll catch up soon.
Take care.
You too.
See ya. That's Chris Mitchell again, at CJMitch73 on Twitter, and you can follow him, rotoexperts.com and SB Nation's Minor League Baseball.com, and his podcast, again, a podcast to be named later, and the Roto Experts Fantasy Sports Show. So all of those are the way you can keep up with what Chris is doing, listen to him, get his advice, and that sort of thing. Bob, I know I'll be tapping Chris a bunch during the fantasy football season, trying to figure out what the heck I need to be doing. I appreciate the strategies he laid out for me. I will certainly take advantage of that. But no one knows fantasy sports better than Chris Mitchell does.
No, especially here in New England. He's a great resource. Again, follow him on Twitter, and you'll be glad he did. And I hope we can talk to him throughout the season.
Yeah, I do too. So we got to make that a thing. All right, when Bob and I come back, we'll be turning on our Thursday Night Tailgate spotlight on the positive. Hear which players are doing great things out there in their communities. Then we'll wrap up the show, and we're going to do that all on the other side of these words about the Salt Creek Golf Retreat and Doubleback Winery.